Well, I hope you like the church. I don't mean the building itself. I mean what we did with it over the weekend. I need to thank a load of people. I need to thank Christine and the team that worked with her yesterday, Rosie Elliott, Rosie Harvey, Ellen Wilmot, William Archbold, Carolyn Arnold, Belinda Gage, Jackie Fleming, Reggie and Dorothy Andrews, who helped to put all this stuff, and the loads of people who cut down things in their gardens, in some cases in their neighbors' gardens. I hope that that's okay. We even had a postman who noticed some things on his round in the morning and filled his post bag with holly and with conkers and brought it down here yesterday. And by the way, James, if you hear, your post bag's in my office. I assume that needs to go back to the post office. And just thanks to everybody who just joined in the spirit of it and really managed, helped us to do what our vision was to do. Yesterday, Jean Pillar had a training event here yesterday. There were people here from all sorts of different places, and there were a couple of people there who work in a Catholic order, and they were on her training course, and one of them came into the church and had a look around. She said she'd never seen anything like this ever in church before, and then she said, it's like you brought the outside to the inside, which was exactly the vision we had. And so thanks to everybody who made it possible to do that. Hope you'll take the chance to have a look around afterwards. Lots of small things hidden in corners. Lots of things to take a look at before you go. Just thanks to everybody who responded so amazingly and made this possible. So we are in awe of the God who does these things. Provides us with all this stuff for free. Well, to be honest, we cheated, okay? Some of the flowers we had to buy. But everything else is for free, okay? Even the plants, I borrowed those from Hillview Nursery. So just to say thanks to them, make sure you go and buy some in a Christmas shop or something like that, just to say thanks for lending me those plants. So everything here is for free, okay? And it's supplied by God. And we want to take the opportunity this morning to say thanks to him. David asked a question in the 116th Psalm. What shall I return to the Lord for all his goodness to me? What would an offering to God look like? Well, it turns out there's an episode in David's life that helps to answer that question. The story I want to refer to this morning is actually recorded twice in the Old Testament. It's in 2 Samuel 24, and it's in 1 Chronicles 21. The story, in each case, largely the same. There are a few differences between the way that the different writers record what happened, but largely they are the same. The context of that story was something that David did that he shouldn't have done. We read that he took a military census of all the people in Israel who were of fighting age. It turned out there were between, depending on which of the two versions of the story you read, between 1.1 and 1.3 million men who were of military age that David could call on if he needed them. And he had them counted. His leading military commander said, please don't do it. Why would you do this? He said, all these people are yours. God has given to you. Why do you need to count them? Please don't do it. But the king did it. And the moment the census was finished and the army officers returned with the results of the census, David realized that he shouldn't have done it. And one of his closest friends, a guy called Gad, who was a prophet and a seer in Israel, who'd been with David like a long, long time. He had been with David when David was on the run, and he'd stayed with him. And God gives Gad a message, and God brings it to David. He said, David, the Lord gives you the choice of three things as a result of what you've done. You're going to have 3 years of famine in the land. You're going to have 3 months of running from the sword of your enemies. Or you can have 3 days of the sword of the Lord. What's it going to be? David makes an unusual choice, I think. I think he makes a choice that would be countercultural for us. He says, in answer to God, let me fall into the hands of the Lord, for his mercy is very great, but do not let me fall into human hands. David wasn't going to choose 3 years of famine. That's a complete nightmare. So they were left with two choices. He could run from the sword of his enemy, or he could experience the sword of the Lord. He chooses the sword of the Lord. It's an incredible choice. We would probably take our chances against the enemy, you know? If you run faster than him, you get away. But David doesn't choose the wrath of men, because he knows that God, our God, is more merciful even than human beings. It's kind of an opposite way around to how we sometimes think about these things. So the destroying angel begins his work from Dan to Beersheba. He goes throughout the country, bringing a plague upon the people. 70,000 people die. Think about the Ebola plague in the moment, and they're talking about 4,000 people dying. 70,000 people die over the three-day span of the plague. And towards the end of the 3 days, the destroying angel is doing his work in judgment upon Israel, comes to Jerusalem. And the plan is that Jerusalem will be totally wiped out. Think about it this way. If a plague comes to a rural area, there's a chance that a lot of people will escape. But if a plague comes to a built-up city where people live side by side with each other, that plague is going to basically take everyone. And the destroying angel comes to Jerusalem. David sees him come. And as he is going to begin his work to destroy the city of Jerusalem, God relents. God changes his mind. And it says in 1 Chronicles 21, God speaks to the destroying angel as his sword is hovering above the city of Jerusalem. Enough, he says. Withdraw your hand. And the place where this happens, the place where the destroying angel stops his work and where Jerusalem is saved, is the threshing floor of a guy called Arauna. David is told to go and build an altar there on that threshing floor and make an offering to God. So he takes some of his leading advisors and he goes to Arauna's farm. And when he gets there, he finds Arauna threshing wheat on the threshing floor. Okay, he and his four sons, when the four sons see the angel of the Lord hovering over Jerusalem, they're scared stiff and they go and hide. So when David gets there, there's just the dad. Arauna is not a Jew. He's a Jebusite. He's one of the Canaanite inhabitants who lived in Jerusalem before Jerusalem became the city of David. The angel is scary enough, but more scary than the angel is the sight of the king approaching him with some of his retinue. And Arauna goes out to meet David and he says to him, "Why has my lord the king come to his servant?" And David said, "I came to buy your threshing floor." "What do you want my threshing floor for?" he said. David said, "I have to make an offering to the Lord, a burnt offering, sacrifice. Name your price, whatever you want. I want you to name me the market value of your land, and I will buy it from you for the market value." And Arauna looks at the king and he said, "Take it. Take the ground." He said, "Take the threshing floor. Here," he said, "here are the threshing sledges made of wood. Chop them up for fire. Here are the oxen. Kill them. Sacrifice them on the altar. Here's the grain that I have threshed. Take it for the wheat offering to the Lord. Take the whole thing. Take whatever you want. You're the king. I give them to you." "No," says David. "I can't take it. I have to pay for it. I have to pay the full market value, because David says, I will not take for the Lord what is yours or sacrifice a burnt offering that costs me nothing." So he bought the threshing floor, the sledges, the oxen, the wheat, and the surrounding farm for 600 shekels of gold. That was 6.9 kilos of gold. I checked on the internet last night. At today's market value of gold, that represents a price of over £185,000. See, an offering has to be sacrifice. Eugene Peterson in The Message translates that verse like this: "I'm not going to offer God sacrifices that are no sacrifice." This church is full of beautiful things today. Beautiful things we brought to enhance the worship of God. We brought the outside inside so that we could remember who he was and so that we could glorify him in the things that he does. But these things cannot be an offering because they are free. Because the first thing we learn from the story of David is that offering is expensive. Offering is expensive. Now, I know when we come to talk about this, we obsess about value, you know, the value of the offering. Brand's already said we should be thinking about 10%. I heard at someone I was at during the week, actually, that the key idea of the tithe is not so much the proportion, the 10%. The key idea of the tithe is that you give the first. You give the first to God. That's the most important aspect of the tithe. It's that you give the first to Him. When it came time to make a sacrifice, what did God do? God gave the first and the best. He gave His one and only Son, the first fruits of all creation. That's what He's described as in the New Testament. God gave the first. And that's what we are supposed to be doing when we give to Him. We're supposed to give the first. And it isn't an offering unless it costs us something. And I know that we have ways of thinking about this, and especially in mainstream churches, there's a tradition and a way of doing this that is kind of built into our habits, and it's really hard to break a bad habit when you're in it. And we're in a bad habit about giving. What's our bad habit? Our bad habit in giving is that we always give to need. We have to build new halls. It's going to cost a lot of money. Oh dear, we need to give. We have to pay staff, and we need the money for that. Oh dear, we need to give. We've got a team of people going out to Moldova in the summertime, and they're going to do really important work, and it's a very, very poor country. Oh dear, we need to give. That's a bad habit. We need to get out of it. It's a bad habit. Why is it a bad habit? We're not supposed to be giving to need. We're supposed to be giving in response to the generosity of God. And we give whether there's a need or not. It's an act of worship. It's an expensive act of worship. And it means deciding to give to God something we could have used ourselves. Not particularly because of the need, but just because it's a way to say that we love Him, we bless Him, we are thankful to Him for all that He has done. I was at a conference during the week in Green Pastures in Ballymena, and Jeff Wright, who's the pastor there, was talking about their new development. They're moving from their present site to another site they bought on the other side of Ballymena, and they're going to put up a building and a complex that's going to cost £5 million. And they only have 600 grand in the bank, so they're not much further on than we are, and they've got an awful lot more money to find. And he was saying about, you know, about how he had been talking to his own people about this. You know, he said, look, he said, if I can get 500 people to give £10 a week, we can do this. What's £10 a week? It's a Chinese on a Friday night. I don't know. I don't eat Chinese. But anyway, I don't eat anything that I can't know what's on the plate. So he said, I need 500 people to give me the price of a Chinese every week. That's all I need. And it struck me, you know, that that's a really good way of thinking about what you're going to give to God in response to what Brand said a moment or two ago. Suppose instead of just getting out one of these, all right? Okay, I'm still a dinosaur. I'm still using envelopes, all right? I really need to get around to standing order, but I've still got envelopes. Okay, so you get one of these out and you put some money in it. Instead of doing that, suppose you thought about something you could give to the Lord. Something you could give to the Lord. And you took the monetary value of that and put that in the envelope instead. For example, why not give God your Sky subscription? It's rubbish. It's never anything but rubbish on it. Why not give Him your Sky subscription? All right? I don't mean keep the Sky. I mean get rid of the Sky and give what you're paying for the Sky subscription to the Lord every month from now on. That's a gift. It's going to cost you something. That's an act of sacrifice. That's an offering. Or if not your Sky subscription, what about your season ticket? The football's rubbish too. As for Ulster rugby, it's up and down. Give God your season ticket. Why not? Why not give God what you would have spent on the car if you changed it? And don't change it. Or why not decide that you don't really need 3 holidays in the year and give the price of one of those holidays to the Lord? You see, that's an offering because it's a sacrifice. I'm going to take something that I could have used for myself and I'm going to give it to the Lord. This is Christian giving. On the first day of every week, Paul says, each of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with your income, saving it up, so that when I come, no collections will have to be made. Paul didn't do money for need. He did money in response to the generosity of God. Offering is expensive. If what's in your envelope didn't cost you anything, I'm sorry, but it's not an offering. But David hands over the money, £185,000, he hands over for the threshing floor. He buys the threshing floor and he buys everything else. He buys the threshing sledges, he buys the oxen, he buys the wheat, he buys the ground. And he offered the sacrifice. It says, he called on the Lord, and the Lord answered him with fire from heaven on the altar of burnt offering. So here's the second thing about offerings. Offerings that are offerings, really are offerings. Offerings are accepted. Fire from heaven in the scriptures always is saying that an offering is accepted. You remember when Gideon was called to be a leader among his people, and an angel of the Lord comes to him when he's in a threshing floor, interestingly enough, he's threshing corn in a wine press. And he has a conversation with the angel, and he asks the angel to wait till he goes and makes some food for him. And he brings the food out and places the food on a rock beside the angel, and the angel touches it with his staff, and the food is consumed by the fire of the Lord. Or you remember Elijah on the mountain with the prophets of Baal, the soaking sacrifice, you know. He calls on the name of the Lord to honor God before the people, and the fire of God falls and consumes the sacrifice and consumes the water and everything else that's in the trench around the plain altar of stones that Elijah has built. The fire of God is the symbol of God receiving the offering. Fire of the Lord consumes everything. He takes it all. He takes it all. You need to be careful what you offer. God doesn't do cash back. You know what I mean by that? You know, he takes it all. I know sometimes with your parents, sometimes it's hard. You know, you do a deal with one of your children. You know, they want to save up for someone. Dad, if I save up such and such, will you put the other half to it, you know? And so you strike a deal, and they save up their pocket money, or maybe they have a wee job, and they kind of gather it up over a few weeks or a few months, and then you go to, and I don't know about you, but I was always racked with conscience every time we had a deal like that with one of the kids, because when you went to go to pay for it, I always felt terrible taking the money off the child, you know? It always seemed like there's something wrong about this, and yet it was a way to teach them something, and you know, you had to do it, you know. So, but sometimes their mom, or even more unlikely, me, might have said, "Well, okay, at least give me 40% of it rather than 50%, and they get to take a little bit of the money back." Okay, God doesn't do cash back; He takes it all. I don't mean by that that God isn't generous to us. Of course He is. And the scripture says that nobody lost homes or family or anything for me that didn't get it back 10,000 times over. I understand that. But at the moment of offering, He takes it all. He accepts the sacrifice. This is not payment for something. Because everything God gives is free. He asks for nothing in return. But offerings are just that. They are offerings. And they are accepted in full. So even with His own son, He accepts the offering and consumes the sacrifice. He didn't say to Jesus in the end of the day, "You've come this far, you've gone on the cross, you've demonstrated your good faith, don't worry, you don't have to die, you can come down now, that's it." He allowed His son to die and be buried in the grave. He takes it all. He accepts the offering. There's been a fair bit of talk in the media during the week about Martina Purdy, the reporter in Northern Ireland, who has decided to leave her work on the BBC and enter a religious congregation. And there's different views on that at the time, you know. But one thing I do know is this. I don't think I've ever met Martina Purdy. I've seen her sometimes on the television. But I do know this, that if what she has decided to do is offer the rest of her life as a life of prayer to the Lord, as an offering and sacrifice, God will accept it, the whole thing. What have you offered, or what are you thinking of offering? You need to be careful about this, you know, because God accepts the offering. There's lots of people, you know, and God gives them children, and they bring them to church and have a dedication service or baptismal service, depending on what background you come from. And there's a sense very often on people's part there, you know, that somehow or another they're giving the future of these child's lives over to the Lord. We want the Lord to have the first part in their lives. That's partly why we do this. It's partly why we bring them to church, to send them to Sunday school and all the rest of it. But then how do we feel if one day they come in and they say, Dad, Mum, I think God's calling me to go to work for him. I'm going to give up a job. You know, I'm going to give up everything that you sacrificed for to get me to university and get me my qualifications and get me so that I could do this really, really cool job. But now I think God's telling me that I'm not supposed to do that, that I'm supposed to become a minister or missionary or become a youth worker in a local church where you won't have any sense of job security and you'll be fairly poorly paid and you don't know what the future holds. What do you say then whenever you discover that God accepted the sacrifice? That God said, okay, give the child to me. This is what we're going to do. Or what do you say when they come and say, Mom or Dad, I've been going out with this guy or this girl, and they're going to be a missionary, and so I think I'm obviously going to have to go with them if we decide to go ahead and get married. What do you say then? You need to be careful what you offer the Lord, because he accepts the offering. He takes it all. Offering is accepted. Maybe there's some of us today in church, you know, and we need to rethink things we offered in the past. Because he accepts the offering. We just didn't do the handover. Offering is expensive. It isn't an offering unless it costs me something. Offering is accepted. God doesn't do cash back. He takes the whole thing. Sacrifice is accepted. Fire falls from heaven. Nothing is left. The plague in Israel stops. David and his family and his city are spared. And there before the altar of the Lord, on the threshing floor of Araunah, David is forgiven. And his life is made right with the Lord again. And his fellowship is restored. But in that moment, when David bought the ground and made the sacrifice, he also made this possible for others. For we read in 1 Chronicles 22, verse 1, that David says this, "The house of the Lord God is to be here, and also the altar of burnt offering for Israel." Third thing we discover about offering is this, that offering is investment. Offering is investment, because this piece of ground would be the spot, this threshing floor of Araunah, where the destroying angel stopped his work, where Jerusalem and David's family were saved. This place is to this day the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. It is the place where the temple of God would be constructed and where for generations and generations to come, people would have the opportunity of experiencing the same thing that David experienced in that place. The house of the Lord, where would be contained the mercy seat, the place where it was possible to bring the hurts and the sins of the nation to God. The place where those sins and hurts could be forgiven and redeemed, where people could be cleansed and made new, where there could be a change of heart, and where there could be a new relationship with God. That mercy seat and the altar of sacrifice, where men and women could make their response to the generosity of God, would be on the threshing floor of Araunah as long as the temple was the temple. It was just ground, that's all. It was just a piece of ground, some farming tools, and a few animals. But it would become an investment because it would become the place that which would be central to the life of the whole nation for generations to come. That offering that David made, all this money that it cost to buy the ground, and the experience that David had on that piece of ground of the generous love, mercy, and forgiveness of God would now, through David's investment, become available to succeeding generations so that all the other people in his country would have the opportunity of this same experience of forgiveness in new life. you know, unless these new halls are an investment, there is no point. There is no point. It's really cool to have nice buildings. This building proves how incredible it is to have the proper buildings for what you're trying to achieve. And the plans that we have, however much tweaking needs to be done to them to get them right, the plans that we have are really great, and they will offer the kinds of resources to us that we currently don't have, make our work easier in all sorts of ways. But you know what? Unless they are an investment, unless we're doing this because what we want those halls to achieve is to touch loads of other lives so loads of other people get to experience in this place what we have experienced for ourselves, there is no point. There is no point. Putting up snazzy buildings, pointless. Unless they are just tools. Just tools. Just places for people to gather. Just environments in which other people can come to experiences we have had ourselves. That's what offering's about. We're going to put up buildings that are going to benefit loads of people. Probably most of the people who will benefit from it will not be us. It will be children and young people and people who are currently outside of Christ and outside of hope who are going to be drawn into activities we run there. They're going to come to know Jesus as Savior. We're going to put something up that's an investment. It's not for us. It's not for us. Offering never is. That conference I talked about, I was at the other day during the week in Ballymena. It was running in Green Pastures. It wasn't run by them. It was run by an association of churches from the United States. And I went along for a couple of days myself and then some of the staff I took along on Thursday for a particular session at the conference. It was incredible. For 3 days we were there on and off. And we were hosted and fed and looked after. We didn't have to pay a penny piece. All the food was provided for free, all the materials were free. Following up afterwards, some of the speakers offered stuff that normally you have to buy, was offered free to everyone who was there. Why did they do that? Why did they do that? Give resources and money and things that they had to people they didn't even know. Why? So that we might enter into their experience, that we might learn from them what God has been doing through them and planting churches and bringing thousands of people to faith all across North America and learning how to do that from people in whose lives God has already been at work and encouraging us to enter into the same experience. One of the local folks who's on the local team of this is a guy from the south of Ireland who runs a big church that he planted in the Republic. Everybody knows him as PJ. And he was there and he was speaking at the conference. And this is what he said. This is what he said. He said, "We gathered you all together today. We called you to this place. Because," he said, "there are 6.4 million people on the island of Ireland, and we want them all. We want them all." See, that's offering as investment. That's saying, we've done this today. We've gathered you people here at our expense. We've looked after you and cared for you. Why? So that you might catch the vision we have, so that all the 6.4 million people on this island get the chance to hear about Christ. Get the opportunity to respond because we want them all. If you're making an offering to God, if you're going to get involved in the life of our church and you're going to give to God as I've been seeking to encourage you to do today, what are you doing it for? What's the purpose? This is the purpose. You know, when we set ourselves a target a number of years ago to reach 85,000 people in Newton Abbey, I think most people think that that's just like something you say. It looks cool on paper, you know, and gives you a sense of the fact you're trying to do something really big and ridiculous. I don't know how it is for you. For me, it's for real. For me, it's for real. I never meant it in any other way than the fact that I want them all, every single one of them. Not in this church, we don't have the room for them all, but in some church, I want them all to know Jesus Christ. We can never be satisfied until every single one of them and all the people in Greater Belfast, for that matter too, have had the chance to hear and make a response. We want everyone to experience what we've experienced for ourselves. Therefore, our offering is an investment. It's not for us. It's for them. Offering. What would it look like? What would it look like to make an offering to the God who does all this for free, what would it look like? It would look expensive, because you cannot give to him something that doesn't cost you anything. It would be accepted, however big it was. The moment it's offered, it will be received, and he will take it all. He doesn't do cash back. And it will be an investment, because most of what we give will not benefit ourselves. It's not for us. We're not given to make ourselves more comfortable. We're not given to make life easier for ourselves. We're given for the sake of the people, the 6.4 million people on this island, because we want them all.